At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Ian DeLisi.
And I'm Chef James Rigotto.
And in today's episode of Essential Cooking, James tells me about the inspiration he got from his recent trip to Japan. Well, you have been the world traveler these days.
A little bit.
A little bit of a world traveler. And I have heard you say wonderful things about places that you have gone to and you've traveled the world, but not quite as animated about this trip to Japan.
It's true. You know, everyone's always told me how amazing Japan is. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted to go, but obviously in recent years, they've been really shut down. And even right now, you have to have a work visa. So you can't just show up as a tourist.
So you can't just go?
Correct. You have to have a very good reason to go, such as a work visa or a planned travel group approved by the government. So It was really difficult. I mean, I had to go to the consulate, get a work visa, download a bunch of apps, get approved through, multiple different sources. And I took 3 different PCRs just to be safe, printed everything off in case when I got, over there. I even actually, my app wasn't downloading because I landed in Japan, Tokyo, and then I couldn't get my app to work that I needed. So I actually had already printed off my QR codes. Mm-hmm. It was a little stressful getting there, but, once you get out of the airport, it's a different world. And I've been to Asia before, and Asia is I think a really immersive, continent. You're just completely swept away, into a new world. Obviously the language barriers there and the really old cultures.
Right.
We obviously live in a pretty new culture here. And yeah, but Tokyo was just like, I think Tokyo is the best city in the world as far as how society functions. The amount of people that it's like, I think it's like 30 million in the greater area or something crazy. Mm-hmm. And you could probably Wikipedia that, but it's the largest population in the world in one city. And it feels as like tidy and calm as like Grand Rapids. I was like walking around. I mean, granted, there's not a lot of tourists right now, but still the residents, there's a lot of people that live there. Mm-hmm. And it was just spotless and quiet and calm. And like, even in a very busy neighborhood, it's like quiet and polite. You go to a busy restaurant, it's just quiet and polite. It's just, there's a social contract of service there. You take care of others and others take care of you.
One of the things that you mentioned to me to that point was how safe you felt there and how you felt that children were safe there.
Yeah, there's definitely, there's like no real fear of the crime that we deal with here. And obviously it's ironic because, Abe, their prime minister, mm-hmm. was just assassinated, which right. is terrible. And it was a shock to everybody. And mm-hmm. I was there, I think, a week later. So that you can right. definitely, there's a heaviness with that. But that's such a rare thing. I mean, I didn't even see an argument. You don't even see like a fussiness in people. There's a very tolerant politeness. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I talked to some locals, as much as I could, obviously without speaking Japanese. And I think there's definitely pressure in the community. So like, I think the younger generation probably feels like, there's a lot of pressure and they want to travel and kind of go to other countries. So, it's not like it's like utopia. There's definitely mm-hmm. Issues that I think the generations will have inside Japan, and they have a very aging population. So there's definitely a lot of interesting things with that. But in general, yeah, you feel so comfortable and so safe and so taken care of that it's overwhelming, especially to come home. I had culture shock coming home. It's just like, oh, it's so loud and crazy and like, all the vehicles here, just are so loud. Like there, I feel like everything's like, even the semi trucks are like buzzing instead of like roaring down the street. And this is not even touching on food yet. This is just getting off the plane and walking around and being in the neighborhood. Everyone's always told me great things, and I just, nothing could have prepared me for how much I loved it.
Could you imagine living there?
The language barrier is the only thing that I would stress. Mm-hmm. Japanese is a very different language. It's like one of the more difficult ones to learn in the world. I think next to like Mandarin. And it's just the whole, there's 3 different styles of writing. It's obviously composed differently. You read it, differently. And mm-hmm. it's also the translations to English are interesting because there's a politeness that we don't have. So there's a lot of sayings that are like, you know, almost we would consider to be like useless because it's basically a formality of politeness. So just translating it is really unique. But other than that, absolutely. I mean, I'm kind of neurotic the way that I like to live my life. Mm-hmm. I like things very tidy. So immediately I was like soothed in a way that I haven't felt in visiting another city before, is like everything's just so tight and tidy and clean and professional. So I think a lot of chefs would probably feel comfortable in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as far as I could eat there every single day.
So yeah, we should definitely talk about the food. This is essential cooking after all. Did you know what to expect when you got there? Did you already have a sense of what you were walking into when it came to the food culture? Or even as much as you've traveled and as much as you know about food, were you still pretty surprised or kind of, you know, like, wow, I had no idea, like those moments?
I definitely was prepared for the restaurants that I sought out, you know, so the sushi shops, the ramen, the okonomiyaki, the, you know, kind of the hibachi, the teppanyaki, like a lot of the dramatic kind of cooking and the things that you're looking after in this industry. Like the sushi chef is like the maitre d' of he's hosting the experience. You go to the hibachi, you know, there's the chef that's really, I mean, guiding your experience. It's like, there's so much theater that I researched and I've watched a lot of, content. So mm-hmm. I think I was prepared for what they were going to look like and how it was going to feel, but the flavors and the freshness and the diversity of items was just super stimulating. Like, we went to the fish market. We did a really wonderful omakase sushi tasting with this chef Daisuke, a really talented individual, second generation sushi maker. His grandfather worked at the fish market. So he took us through the fish market, which tourists aren't allowed to go to. It's only for like locals and vendors and stuff. So we walked the entire fish market, which is massive. It's basically like, you know, it like dwarfs like the Eastern market, and it's all seafood. And you're seeing all different, you know, fugu, the poisonous blowfish, you know, sharks. You're seeing live crab. You're seeing different kinds of bivalves and mollusks and shellfish that I've never even seen or heard of before. It was really intoxicating to be in this area of like, what is even happening here? Like, I'm a chef. I've been cooking for 26 years. I have no idea what's going on right now. And it was amazing.
This is a daily market only for
basically industry, essentially. Industry. You know, yeah, some kinds of.
So every single day.
Oh yeah. I mean, this market. You know, and that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think it's every day. I didn't ask that. I mean, it's gotta be every day.
But I would imagine, with that many people that they're feeding every day, right?
And they do the tuna auction where they obviously auction off
right.
a whole bluefin is way bigger than you expect.
I mean, is it?
It's like a few hundred pounds. It's a massive fish. And to watch these guys break down the tuna with these essentially swords, you know, the way that you actually process the tuna.
Is there a lot of, I mean, you must be able to feel the history here, like that there is a protocol that has been around for a very long time, and that some of those things are still in place. There's got to be something really fascinating, and you must be able to feel all of that history there.
You can. Japan's one of those countries that's, you know, has a wonderful ancient culture, but it's also incredibly modern. So you're constantly going through time travel there, whether you're walking in one of the old temples and then you go to they have robots that cook for you. You can go and get a hot sweet potato vending machine. You know, you're absolutely living in the future. All the taxi cabs, the doors open automatically. You know, the taxi drivers are like wearing suits, and like, it's just, it's such a dynamic place because you can go to things, you can experience something that feels so timeless, right? The tea service. We went and did a tea tasting where this gentleman just kept basically hydrating these different tea leaves. And sometimes he would rehydrate and you'd get like second and third washes of green tea. Mm-hmm. And then at the end you eat the tea with chopsticks. And it was just it felt so ancient. It felt like this is something that they were, you know, somebody was doing 1,000 years ago. And then, but then you go and you have a robot, you know, mm-hmm. making you food. So like there's, it has a little bit of everything. I think maybe I'm being romantic, and there are obviously experts of Japanese culture that I'm barely scratching the surface, but I think it represents a lot of like the best of what humanity can offer as far as technology and you know, infrastructure. I mean, the roads and the subway are essentially perfect. And the way that they treat each other, the unspoken social contract of just how to treat each other. And I think that's intoxicating for, you know, in America, it's all about the individual freedom. It's about me versus everyone else. And in Japan, it's about the functioning of society and the service to each other and what do we owe each other. And even their relationship with death, like death happens. It's not this like unspeakable act. It's this like part of life. And it was enough for me to want to go back so bad that all the places I was thinking about going next were basically dwarfed. And now I just want to go back to Japan.
When you have a food experience like that, do you get inspired to come back and cook? And do all of these thoughts go through your head about things that you want to make or things you want to try or flavors you haven't? I mean, you've pretty much used every ingredient possible, I have to imagine. But just the inspiration to want to cook differently or try new things. How does that feel when you come back from an experience like that as a chef?
Definitely. Most places I go, it's very cut and dry. It's like, wow, I had an amazing dish or I tasted this new combination. I'm going to do that. Japan was, usually I'm doing, you know, arithmetic and this was like, you know, quantum physics. So that there's definitely, I mean, ramen is something I love making and mm-hmm. I feel confident because ramen is such like a hybrid. It's obviously its origins are in China and Japan, everyone's kind of doing their own thing. It's very, very open to interpretation. Like ramen is like kind of like pizza. It's like, however you make it, if it's delicious, then it's delicious. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of strict, you know, kind of rules around it. So I always felt comfortable making ramen. And I definitely want to do like a ramen pop-up at Mabel one day. Like,
oh, that
soon.
Would be great.
I really love ramen and think about it often. But other than that, like sushi is something I'll never make. I have so much respect for sushi mm-hmm. and the way that it's articulated and the relationship with the rice. I mean, even this sushi chef, Daisuke, that we hung out with, I mean, he goes and buys rice directly from the farmers and has a relationship with rice. Like long before he even thinks about butchering a piece of fish, he's like, he's invested in just the rice. And so we just don't have the relationship with rice farmers here in America. And so like, I feel like we don't even have step one down. Mm-hmm. I don't feel confident like running a sushi concept and not against anything those that do, but to me, it's something I don't feel like I have the right to do, mm-hmm. but certain things, okonomiyaki, I mean, that's kind of their fun kind of pancake. It's like a cabbage and, you know, so they had different proteins like pork belly and shrimp. It's kind of like a funky stuffed pancake topped with a bunch of crazy sauces and garnishes. And that too, that's kind of like a diner food, kind of loosey-goosey thing. So I feel like I definitely want to do an okonomiyaki soon. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that cuisine is so, I mean, you have individuals that they really focus on craftsmanship of one or two singular things. So you're dealing with somebody who does this every day, 6 days a week, you know, for their entire lives, probably multi-generational. And so to get inspired to like, oh, I'm going to try it. Like the jack of all trades mentality really doesn't exist there. You know, it's more about singularity. Mm-hmm. So it's, as a chef, it's a little dizzying because I'm like, okay, I want to get better at singular things. And so I need to go there more. I need to go there more and kind of really, really, you know, drink from the cup. Mm-hmm. But I think ramen and okonomiyaki are things that I'm ready to like do right now because they're fun,
right.
They're fast, they're meant to like nourish and feed and be quick and easy. So those things I think are you'll see me doing in the near future.
Do you see any American influence over there?
Well, Japan.
Food-wise especially?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, there's a lot of Italian influence. Japanese mm-hmm. Love Italian cuisine. So you see a lot of pasta restaurants, a lot of pizza restaurants. McDonald's is there, but obviously McDonald's is run entirely different. It's like professional and, you know, it's really tidy, mm-hmm. but you know, you definitely see American. I mean, Japan by nature doesn't like really invent a lot. They basically take something and just improve it. I mean, if you look at like the automobile, sushi originally comes from Korea, ramen comes from China. You know, they have a tendency to like find something and make it absolutely the best it can be. So the automobile, right? The car, I mean, obviously that's a no-brainer, but you just see so much innovation. So there's definitely American influence, rock and roll. I mean, my friend that I was over there with is the president of Fender in Asia. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously, you know, the electric guitar. I mean, the rock and roll culture that's there, yep. That's very American. You see it. It's and there's a lot of respect for America. I felt very comfortable. And, you know, even in my bumbling, you know, kind of like tourist, gaijin, as they call it, tourist, nature, they were incredibly hospitable. So, yeah, you see a lot of American products, but just kind of innovated to the top level.
I'd like to thank you for listening, and
we would like to thank La Marca Prosecco for their support. From the hills of Veneto, Italy, you can never go wrong with Prosecco, whether it's in a spritz or drinking straight.
Essential Cooking is produced by me, Anne DeLisi, along with my co-host, James Regatto. This episode was edited, mixed, and mastered by Sam Bobian, with production support from David Lyons. Original music by the Mallet Brothers. Essential Cooking is a production of WDET, Detroit's NPR station.